This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, even though the sound of it is something quite atrocious. If you say it loud enough, you'll always sound precocious. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Because I was afraid to speak when I was just a lad. My father gave me nails a tweak and told me I was bad. But then one day I learned a word to save me aching nose.
The biggest word you ever heard, and this is how it goes. Oh, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Even though the sound of it is something quite atrocious. If you say it loud enough, you'll always sound precocious.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
BFM 89.9, it is 7:38 and you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvin. And today we are going to be talking, in case that did not tip you off, about musicals.
You know, if you're from a particular generation, I will bet money that that or Sound of Music was probably your first proper movie musical. Every time I hear it, I remember Mary Poppins and I think, okay, I watched Indian movies growing up, so I understood that songs in films was a concept. But in Hollywood films, it wasn't the done deal, right? So I think something like Mary Poppins or Sound of Music, really, they feel so different from regular, quote-unquote, movies. And in a very particular way, I love being reminded of musicals.
So I think it's kind of important to say that I don't like musicals. It is my least favorite genre. But I thought that it was like an important basis to set before getting into the show. It's not that I hate it and I've got nothing against it. But if there was a musical showing in the cinema, 9 out of 10 times I wouldn't buy a ticket. And then if it showed up on TV, 9 out of 10 times, I wouldn't watch it on TV. But then there are some musicals that are so good that I really, really love and appear in like my top 20 favorite movies of all time. So it varies. It's like on two extremes. My goal for the end of this show is to find some sort of appreciation for musicals so that I like them more than I do right now.
So I love musicals. I really do. But I will say that I have a pretty clear and concrete preference for older musicals. And I think that that perhaps comes from when I watched it, right? Because if you watch it as a kid, then there are certain things that are embedded in your head, like Dick Van Dyke's accent and penguins and you know, Austria, just like all that. And so I think that there is a certain affinity that I feel for musicals that I watched growing up. And that includes stage musicals, the soundtrack of which I might have listened to growing up and seeing that translated onto stage onto the screen, that's also quite different. Newer ones, though, more recent musicals, I find myself being a lot more finicky about. And I have a theory about that, aside from just being older and more cynical. I think another part of it is that we have fewer triple threats. I think that, you know, it used to be the case when you were growing up, and Indian cinema is a great example. Chinese cinema is a great example. Basically, international cinema, it is somewhat expected that people might break into song, and it's not kind of out of the ordinary. And a lot of our stars, the people that we would consider as the stars, could move pretty seamlessly from intense drama to crazy comedy to musical, and we would expect that. But now I feel like that's not the path to stardom anymore.
There's also a difference, right, between the musicals that had their life begin on stage and then made the journey onto screen, and what we're seeing more of now, which are musicals that are written specifically for the screen and so therefore have a particular structure about them. I don't necessarily have a preference per se, but barring, let's say, La La Land and perhaps things like Yesterday, which kind of take inspiration from existing songs, I tend to veer a lot more towards the ones that existed on stage and then make their way to screen, just because I feel like I feel like they were written to be that. And I feel like they include the songs in the story in a very specific way that I enjoy. It's tough, you know. I think the triple threat thing is a real issue. And I do want to talk about that later, because there's always this criticism when they cast actors, big names, who can't actually sing to be in roles that require actually a great range of singing, because on stage, the people who played them were actual singers.
So I feel that also goes into like two different brackets, right? And I wanted to ask you guys about this. I feel like there are two kinds of musicals. One where the song is a part of the story. So they're literally singing the story itself, like dialogue becomes song, dialogue has music to it. And sometimes they don't even rhyme. It just has a sing-songy way about it. I think Sweeney Todd is a lot like that. And then there are musicals where the songs are completely separate. So like you mentioned like Indian cinema, so like Tamil cinema, Hindi cinema, all like perfect examples of having like songs and then having the story. So Disney does the same thing. They have the songs and then they have story. Lots of live action musicals do the same thing. I find that the ones that turn story into song instead of have them separately are the ones that I prefer a lot more than having the film sort of interrupted.
Interesting.
And I also feel that goes to the triple threat thing, because when you have like separate songs, then you have the ability of getting other people to do the songs for them, and they just have to lip sync, or they just have to sort of... their singing and dancing is not based on the story or the song particularly, if that makes any sense.
Can I very gently, but also firmly, but also pointedly point out that there was a judgment there inherent in what you said, which is the idea of having songs interrupting the story.
Yes.
And I think that says a lot about where we land when it comes to musicals, because I sometimes struggle actually with musicals that are entirely sung through, meaning to say almost every inch of the story is told through song. Because I do feel like if there's a song that I don't like, or if there's a bit that I struggle with and I'm like, oh no, I'm going to be stuck with you for 5 minutes. And so I do like the sort of push and pull between having snappy dialogue, but also having the songs and having them built in to the script or built into the film.
So, unpopular opinion, I love Les Miserables, the stage version. The reason I couldn't stand the movie version was because the sung-through thing gets really challenging when you have to listen to Russell Crowe croak his way through dialogue. I just could not. Hugh Jackman is great. He is a true triple threat. But Russell Crowe, I'm sorry, he cannot sing.
He is Javert.
Oh,
and that's
God.
It. That's the whole thing.
Exactly.
It's just Javert through
so
the whole thing.
I like sung-through musicals, but I much prefer them on actual stage. I think in film... I love song and dance. I'm actually, you know what? I love musicals in general, but sung through doesn't always work on screen for me.
But you see what I mean? You've judged him based on his singing because of the sung through thing.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So you need to be a good singer to be able to pull that off.
I guess, yeah. But I'm also going to say that I've never finished any version of that movie. They're always way too long. And the songs like always get in the middle of what I'm trying to follow. And then I'm like, I just can't. To this day, I've never finished any film version of that musical, like ever.
I have a lot to say actually about Les Mis, and particularly the ways in which musicals accidentally get lumped into the really hard to do category. And so then you have like people talking about musicals like they were filming The Revenant or something. It's that equivalent. So, and Les Mis definitely falls into that category. But let us know. We are talking today about musicals and we want to know, step one, you love them, you hate them, tell us why. Step two, if you love them, what are your favorites? WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. While we're talking about Russell Crowe, since we're spewing hate, I also have to say that Pierce Brosnan...
Ah, I knew it!
...is unlistenable to in Mamma Mia, but because of the structure of the film and how fundamentally silly it is, it kind of works. Anyway, we'll be playing out with a little bit of Mamma Mia. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
So I made up my mind, it must come to an end.
BFM 89.9, the business station.
Well, it's quite simple, a polka. You count 1, 2, 3, and 1, 2, 3, and 1, 2, 3, and.
Shall we dance?
1, 2, 3, and.
On a bright cloud of music, shall we fly?
1, 2, 3, and.
Shall we dance?
1, 2, 3, and.
Shall we then say goodnight and mean goodbye?
1, 2, 3, and.
Or perchance.
When the last little star has leave the sky,
shall we still be together with our arms around each other? And shall you be my new romance? On the clear understanding that this kind of thing can happen,
shall we dance? Shall we dance? Shall we dance?
Now,
1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3.
BFM 89.9, it is 7:49, you're listening to Popcorn Culture, where tonight our supercut is going to be focused on me being very angsty indeed that we have to interrupt the music, because we're talking about musicals. And honestly, listening to that, I just want to keep listening to that. But I did also want to say, we were talking earlier about Triple Threats, and we also spoke about My Fair Lady earlier this week. And so I just wanted to mention Marnie Nixon and just all the ghost singers that have existed throughout Hollywood that have helped to make the women on screen, and not just women, but helped to make the performers on screen sound so good.
So the thing is, I never realized this wasn't an expectation in Hollywood for a very long time, because in Indian cinema, people dubbed for actors all the time. Singers are completely different. Actors are completely different. A few of them can do both, but most of the time they don't. So I assumed they weren't singing for themselves until I realized, no, Julie Andrews really is that amazing. But, you know, The King and I is such a great example of something that shouldn't necessarily work as a musical. And that's a feature that I think the Rodgers and Hammerstein musicals manage quite well, in that they take these stories that are about World War II or the attempted colonization of Siam, fill it with music and movement and color, and yet somehow don't downplay the importance of what's actually happening in the background. And I think if I still feel today that modern movie musicals that want to do that, that want to tell stories through the musical form, could learn so much from these classic Rodgers and Hammerstein musicals.
I'm going to admit something. When you guys brought up this movie, The King and I, the first thing that came to mind was Anna and the King. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's not a musical.
You know, that was the non-musical remake version that few people love.
Yeah.
Very cautiously, because I love the both of them in it, but I don't love the movie.
Oh, you mean it's the same version of the... I mean, it's different versions of the same movie.
Yeah, the same story.
The same story. Okay.
Okay, so here is my central argument, right, for musicals. And that is that, okay, while the structure might not make sense, while we don't all burst into song and dance periodically during the day, although why not? Why not is the question. Anyway, while the structure and the generic trappings might not make sense, what it does do very well is insert a fair amount of fun or a fair amount of levity into something that might otherwise not work. It also compresses a lot of story because of the structure, right? Where you can tell entire courtships within one song. You can tell entire wars within one song in one bravura sequence, for example. And that's what musicals can do, which ordinary movies, which they cannot. And I think that The King and I and Anna and the King is a prime example of that, because it's almost exactly the same story. It really is. Except one of them has Yul Brynner and Deborah Kerr and music, and the other has Jodie Foster and Chow Yun-fat.
And songs, dancing are able to express emotion in a very specific way. And the music, and we talk about this, I think, when we talk about Disney animated films, that the music does a lot in getting the audience into a particular frame of mind, an emotional high that you may not necessarily get when it's just performance. So I think that the addition of music to film, particularly for these sorts of stories, heightens the drama in a way that is very difficult to do if you're not doing it in that method.
So does that mean if something is animated, like Disney, it takes away all the sort of requirements of having the triple threat? People don't care. Obviously, people don't care if it's dubbed or not. They know that there are different voice actors for the scenes or the characters, the dialogue, and then someone else is doing the singing. It takes away so much criteria for what it means to be a musical. But then Disney movies are also some of the most well-known, most popular musicals in the world. Like, just thinking about it, I can't even say that I don't like musicals in that sense, like technically, because I love Disney. So growing up, like most of the things that I consumed were musicals. But for some reason, we don't view them in the same bracket, and I don't know why.
I think it's because the animation gives it room to be so removed from reality that when the music kicks in, you don't have that moment of dissonance. Whereas when you're watching real life actors doing stuff and sort of tap dancing their way through songs, you're like, but why is this happening? Just have an argument. And so I think...
dancing argument.
Yeah. Or just, you know, have a gang fight. Why do we need to snap on the street? And, you know, so I think that the cognitive dissonance is such a big thing, and the animations take it away entirely because you don't have that. You're already watching a speaking lion. Like, we don't need to have that argument.
Also, I think that screen musicals owe so much of their roots to stage musicals, whereas cartoon musicals, animated versions, don't necessarily need feel that kind of connection or beholdenness. You know, so I think like movie musicals almost exclusively are compared against their stage versions. They have their stories from them. And I think that that puts a particular kind of pressure on them that the animated films don't hold.
Oh, speaking of pressure, when you mentioned Russell Crowe again, since we're going back to him for a bit, does it remove the quality for you if something is dubbed? Because I feel like I wouldn't mind bad singing if it's not dubbed. There's something more authentic to it. Like, I don't think Johnny Depp can sing, but Sweeney Todd's like one of my favorite musicals of all time. And it's one of my favorite movies of all time. But I honestly don't think he can sing. I don't think Helena Bonham Carter can sing. But just knowing that they're the ones giving their voices to the characters and they're the ones trying to sing makes me appreciate the movie like a lot more than if someone dubbed over Johnny Depp. I think it's him. It has to be him, right?
No, it is him. It is him. Are you going to bring up the My Fair Lady or am I, Lynn?
You go for it.
So, because you didn't, you weren't there for a throwback to My Fair Lady, Audrey Hepburn famously doesn't sing for that. And that was one of the reasons why she wasn't given the Oscar for the role. Would I have preferred if that was truly her singing? Sure. Did it take away from the fact that it wasn't her when I watched that wonderful performance? Not really. Because I think what I'm responding to is the music and the way everything comes together on screen. So I think for me, I'm willing to suspend that disbelief quite a bit.
So, interesting. I feel like we're talking about fantasy movies. Do you know what I mean? In the sense that how much does it impact the fact that Gandalf isn't actually casting a spell, but the performances are such that he looks like he could. It's not just the effects. You believe that he really is the wizard, and that's part of it, right? And so for me, the singing and the specific kind of demands of a musical and the way you need to act in a musical puts its own set of demands on the actor, even if they're not actually singing. Although I feel differently about dancing. So I don't know. Because
so if they CGI'd them dancing, that would bother you?
Yeah,
that would bother me.
That would bother me too.
Long shot, and you can tell that it's someone in a wig. That's also quite problematic. We do have a people who are bringing up some of the movies we've already mentioned. So Mei Yen says Sound of Music, King and I. We've talked about both. Wilson says Saturday Night Fever, Mamma Mia, Sound of Music, and we also have another from Fateha who says Mamma Mia. And I think that the particular joy of Mamma Mia is that you don't need to learn new songs, but also that it's just kind of really joyous, which is not what I would say for our next clip, which is La La Land.
Yes. So La La Land is, for me personally, like an anomaly because I did not expect to enjoy it as much as I did. Going into it is one of the, you know, the way the trailer plays and when people are talking about it and then it's like a big awards film. I thought it was going to be relatively boring and I thought that most of it was going to be song. I think the sort of small criteria is that the songs in La La Land are not as long as other musicals. Like they sort of blend into the story itself. You get like a couple of minutes here and there, and then the story just continues. And it's just normal dialogue and it's just like normal speaking, you know? And for that reason, I think I really love La La Land. It's also one of my favorite films. I love the way it looks. I love the way it sounds. I love both like Ryan Gosling, Emma Stone. I can watch that movie any number of times and not get bored. And if you call it a musical, it's a musical. I call it like a semi-cheat sort of musical because it's not like all the others, I think.
But it is a compression of all the others. Anyway, sorry.
It's a love letter to musicals in many ways.
It is.
So sorry, I didn't mean to get so stabby. we're talking today about musicals on our Supercut. We want to know if you love them, if you hate them, if you have favorites. Send them our way. WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
City of stars, are you shining just for me? City of stars, there's so much that I can't see. Who knows? I felt it from the first embrace I shared with you.
Business, finance, and music. BFM 89.9.
You, sir, how about a shave? Come and visit your good friend, Sweeney. You, sir, too, sir. Welcome to the grave. I will have vengeance. I will have salvation. Who, sir? You, sir? No one's in the chair. Come on, come on. Sweeney's waiting. I want you, bleeders. You, sir? Anybody? Gentlemen, I don't be shy. Not one man. No, nor 10 men. Nor 100 can assuage me. I will have you.
BFM 89.9, it is 8:08 and you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvin. And together we're talking about musicals, whether or not we love them, which is 2/3 of us, or we are somewhat indifferent, which is 1/3. So I love Sweeney Todd. Listening to that also, though, I was thinking about our earlier discussion about which actors sing their own lines. And I'm just so glad that we now live in an age where a level of technical perfection is no longer really expected when it comes to our musicals, which is why Johnny Depp's performance really worked. I wouldn't want to hear anybody else. We all know what he sounds like, and it would have sounded really strange.
So I was thinking about this during the break, right? And the way we watch movies is very different from the way we watch a stage musical. So what we prioritize on screen, for me, does it matter so much that Johnny Depp's not the best singer? No, because the verve and the creepiness and the weirdness that he brings to the role of Sweeney Todd is so great that even the voice not being that great feeds into the character. So he sings like you imagine Sweeney Todd would sing. And I think there's a real value there. And that's why I don't necessarily enjoy comparisons between stage versions of a musical and film, because we're actually watching them in very, very different ways.
And I don't know how much the aesthetic of the movie has to do with whether or not you care about the person singing or the quality of their voice, you know. Just thinking about specifically La La Land and Sweeney Todd, very aesthetically, like visually pleasing movies. Like the cinematography is amazing, the directing is amazing, everything else is so good and so grand that you kind of don't care that Ryan Gosling and Johnny Depp can't actually sing, that they're mostly just speaking their lines in like sing-songy ways. And I don't know how much that helps. Tim Burton especially had such a vibe to that movie. And the story was so compelling that at the end of the day, you aren't actually judging it on the quality of the song at all. Or I didn't, at least.
I have a theory that Stephen Sondheim's your guy.
I think so too. Yeah.
It really sounds like it.
But not Into the Woods, because that was a terrible, bad screen version of a musical.
That's the thing. But the musical itself is fine. And so I feel as if all the things that you're saying, you know, the beautiful sets, the very intense stories, the very twisted, weird songs, the almost speaking cadence, the minor key jazzy style, all means that Stephen Sondheim's kind of your man. And to be honest, it's a name that's coming up an awful lot. So Shamil says, Sweeney Todd, I remember laughing gleefully when he killed his customers while singing and turning them into pies. Yes, I am a psycho. Meanwhile, Farid says, Sweeney Todd, the demon barber, Into the Woods. My first film, though, was Grease 2.
Grease 2! Did not expect that to come up. So Grease hasn't come up, even though Saturday Night Fever did. And I'm glad...
We have one message about Grease from Luke.
So I love Grease. And I think that I don't know if I want to watch Grease on stage. I don't know if I necessarily care enough. But I love Grease the film. And I think Grease the film is a great example of all the things we've been talking about, how the sheer star power of what you're watching on screen can actually drive the story and the music and the movement so well. I mean, it really helps that they can both sing and dance so well. But I think it's a little bit more than just being able to do that.
I watched Grease once, and then I never went back to it like ever again.
You didn't want them to tell you more?
No, I didn't want them to tell me more anything. I couldn't get the imagery of like 45-year-old people playing teenagers
They were about 30. Okay.
One of their friends looked like he was 45. I'm pretty sure. But the best way I can describe it is, do you guys like bananas in your chocolate ice cream? Like, do you like fruit in your ice cream?
No. No.
I see. I don't. For me, musicals are like anything banana in ice cream. I'm like, separate them. You know, it's like ice cream's ice cream and fruit's fruit. And most times they shouldn't mix. And that's how I see both things. That's my perspective.
So I've been thinking a lot about this and about you, Arvind, and how to talk about this. And I was thinking, but then you also don't like action films. But for me, that was the closest comparison I could make is between musicals and action films. And I know it's odd because they are almost diametrically opposite. I think that their audiences are also pretty much almost diametrically opposite. But they are similar in this regard, in the sense that you have to a certain degree, understand what you're getting yourself into when you enter the cinema, right? There has to be a certain genre expectation. You know that cars can fly, that people's faces will hit houses and they're going to look fine. And that's the action movie genre, and that's okay. And in the same vein with musicals,
I thought you were going to say those were musicals, the cars flying and stuff.
Grease, a car flew.
Exactly.
This is true.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but I feel as if musicals are the same in that there has to be a certain acceptance of the genre and its trappings. And if that acceptance at a base level isn't there, then it's going to have to work extra hard and throw in some, you know, Damien Chazelle stuff or some Tim Burton stuff to entice the non-believers. Whereas for people who are already into it, whether on stage or on screen, you expect the genre and then you just flow with it from there.
And honestly, for me, I credit a lot of that to literally just growing up with Indian films. Even now, it isn't weird or unusual at all for me when I watch a movie and people break out into song. It feels like it's almost a fairly legitimate part of cinema that I expect from certain kinds of movies. And it doesn't bother me or feels natural.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Like for me, it should be a default setting because like my childhood, even like growing up, like, you know, it's all kinds of Indian cinema, actually. It's so normal. And the basic default genre of the film, they are musicals. They don't even call them musicals. But for some reason, I don't know why I haven't like sort of adapted or I haven't accepted them.
I'm thinking as you're saying that, because a lot of Tamil films or Hindi mm-hmm. films, you cut the songs out, you can still follow the story. The songs are meant to exist in their own little space.
Yes.
Where else with Hollywood films, you can't do that. You can't forward through the songs if you hate them, which we used to do with a lot of Indian films. But with Hollywood, if you do that, you miss half the story.
Which is why I wanted to ask you guys, like, is there a cap on how many songs you would like in a film? Like, is there such a thing as too many songs? Because when it comes to musicals, more than two is too many songs for me.
Musical, dude.
That's the beginning and end credit.
That's a movie with songs. That's A Star Is Born.
No, I don't. As long as the songs are good, I don't think I have a limit.
I have a cap on ballads. So I've realized that In thinking about today, in revisiting the things that I've loved, I have a cap on ballads. There's a limited amount of, especially the slow burners. I don't know whether it comes from a childhood impatience with those songs of wanting to fast forward the love scenes and just get back to whatever the story was, and whether that has now extended into my adult life watching musicals. But I will say that I've noticed romantic ballads in particular, I do have a cap. I think one or two is just about there. Beyond, I'm like, yeah, we get it. You know, you're in love.
If you're talking about stuff like that, I think The Greatest Showman, as much as I know lots of people enjoyed it, and I know I'll watch Hugh Jackman in anything musical, the empowering anthem is something I think I can only do one in each film. I cannot do more than one of like, let's rouse everyone up and, you know, grow into being ourselves. No, there's only space for one.
There's the bearded lady. There's the, you know, everyone. Yeah.
Everyone gets
issues.
One.
The Greatest Showman is like a whole other level of musical experience because they had the sing-along version of that movie. But the problem is not everyone went for the sing-along version. So when you go for even the normal screenings, you'd have people singing along to the songs. So I'm like, fantastic. Now I have to put up with the songs in the movie. And I have to put up with people around me singing as well to the movie.
So, and you, I know you hate, you know, cinema disruptions. So this is basically all your worst cinema experiences in one.
Yeah, I'm like, this is perfect, you know.
You're also getting more honest, I notice, as the show progresses. It went from earlier songs interrupting to now I have to put up with the songs. So we're heading further down the rabbit hole. I wanted to look through a few more recommendations before we take a quick break. So Denise says, love it, but mostly stage musicals. I like how songs are written for each characters and also the actors and actresses singing them. And the ones that are sung as dialogue, bickering to impart moral lessons. My favourites are Stephen Sondheim, A Little Night Music Company Into the Woods. I love how much Sondheim we're getting because honestly, he is odd. I love him, but he is odd and it's all very smart and very difficult. And it's not necessarily what I would have thought of as the most mainstream.
Stephen Sondheim is the musical. So I love all of his musicals. Is the one that I both yearn for and am terrified of when I hear someone's doing a film version. Because it could be a Sweeney Todd and that was, oh my God, amazing. But then on the other hand, it more likely is going to be an Into the Woods, which could have been great, but just ended up being... It had like three standout sequences and the rest of it was just flat.
I think this is something... I think this is going to be my gateway. I have a feeling it might, like you said, Lynn. Yeah, maybe.
We also have Jesper saying Grease, Sound of Music, West Side Story that we haven't mentioned, The Bodyguard, Funny Girl, and The Wiz. And Barbara Streisand, right? Talk about Triple Threat. If we go back to that.
Do we even have Triple Threats anymore other than Hugh Jackman, Zac Efron? I mean, so the Glee cast, people like that, but stars who are Triple Threats.
Anne Hathaway, which was the point that she was trying to make with Les Mis and the
Can
the
she dance, though?
I think she could.
Or they'll CGI her.
Yeah. I think Hugh Jackman's the only one. I don't know about Zac Efron either. Maybe just Hugh Jackman.
So again, I think that when it comes to Hollywood in particular, we end up lowering our standards a lot on the singing. You know, there isn't necessarily an expectation that they're going to be flawless with the singing. But the dancing, I think, is one that people definitely expect. And just to circle back to something we said earlier on about Les Mis, so that did annoy me, the focus that Tom Hooper had on, look at the sacrifice. And I'm like, okay, yes, I understand that it's unusual for them to be singing on camera, for example, which they did do. They sang live in that film, more's the pity in some cases. But the thing about it is that robs to a certain degree the effortlessness that I think people like about musicals, or that I do. I like watching people do things that I acknowledge are incredibly difficult in an effortless way. I don't necessarily want to see or hear about the bear in the ice.
And that goes back to how we consume them, because when you watch it on screen, there's an immediacy and an intimacy that you don't get when you're watching it on stage. And I think that completely changes how you relate to what you're watching.
Also, how you consume them is, I'm thinking about, I've never been able to listen to music from either La La Land or Sweeney Todd outside of the film. I mean, I can watch them on YouTube and stuff, but they kind of don't work.
Sweeney Todd on my Spotify and I listen to it all the time, especially when I'm feeling slightly murdery.
Slightly demon barbary.
Slightly, yes.
I will say, though, that Les Mis came up a lot. So, Chris on Twitter said, I enjoyed Les Mis. There was a pause built into that message. Munif says, I went to the cinemas for Les Miserables. Musicals are not my cuppa, but I was pretending to be cultured to impress a girl, as one does. 5 minutes in, and a pair of guys next to us started talking. One of them went, hey, are they going to talk in song like this for 2 hours? You said this was a war movie. To which his buddy replied, it looked like it on the poster. Much to my envy, they left after 10 minutes.
Oh, I feel this guy so much.
I pity the people who didn't know what they were in for when they bought a ticket for Les Mis.
Yeah, that's true. It does look like a war movie.
Can you imagine, though, if like Saving Private Ryan, if they suddenly broke out in like song and dance in the opening of that film?
Not just song and dance, but just spoke in song in the war, in the battlefields.
Oh my God, or like 1917, it's like a one take song, dance, music. It's like, oh.
Dunkirk. Then talk to me about challenge.
Then you come in.
Yes, you see. We also have Desmond also saying Les Miserables. Azrul says, so many to choose from. Les Mis, Moulin Rouge, Greatest Showman. And John says, movie, Les Mis, special mention, Hamilton. Which we'll come back to, but keep those thoughts coming. We're talking about musicals today. We want to know what your favorites are. We also want to know if you love them or hate them. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Our next clip is one of the few modern musicals that I really, really, really love. And a lot of it has to do with the naturalistic way the songs are performed. Here's a little bit of Once.
I don't know you, but I want you all the more for that. Words fall through me and always fool me, and I can't react.
Let me change here.
In games that never amount to more than they're meant, will play themselves out.
Free-minded. BFM 89.9.
I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feeling, I'm happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above.
the sun's in my heart and I'm ready for love. Let the stormy clouds chase everyone from the place. Come on with the rain, I've a smile on my face. I'll walk down the lane with a happy refrain, just singing, singing in the rain.
BFM 89.9, it's 8:25, and you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvin. And today, we've been talking about musicals and really asking you for your favourites, right? Which are the ones that you've enjoyed? Which ones not so much, maybe? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us, of course, at BFM Radio. And I don't really think we need to add on too much. I just wanted to include Singing in the Rain because it is one of my all-time favorites. I mean, not just musical, but films. I've watched that over and over again. I quote it a lot. I quote it at inappropriate times. That's the level of my fandom.
I believe the exact sentence was, if we don't include Singing in the Rain, I will cut you guys, which was said in the planning of the show. Just
so I did also say I care for you both and your friends and I value that and all that. Sure, yes.
Actually, the contrast between Once and Singing in the Rain is really interesting because of that whole one being that typical stylized musical of things that don't really happen in real life. I mean, they should. More people should swing on lampposts and sing in the rain. But versus something like Once, where the idea of singing and the idea of song is woven so beautifully into the story. I mean, La La Land kind of feels like that to me, but perhaps in a little bit more, like it ups the drama a little bit. I truly want to see more musicals that have the Once mode, that take the idea of a musical and make it more natural to film.
Yeah, Singing in the Rain is like, it's such a good movie. The only problem with that is I haven't seen it. I've never seen the movie. I know the song. Obviously, it's so famous. Like anyone who's anyone knows that there is a song like that and it exists. But yeah, I haven't seen the movie. It's on some watch list somewhere. But the mention of sort of like famous music or popular music, I find that if movies have songs that I already know, stuff like Yesterday, stuff like Across the Universe, it's way easier for me to get into those films, even though I did not like Across the Universe because of their use of the songs. But Yesterday, I loved it so much just because every now and then like a Beatles thing kicks in. It's way easier for me to get into the film itself.
I love Moulin Rouge for exactly that reason. Moulin Rouge does it in a little bit of a different way, right? Because what it does is instead of taking an artist's sort of entire body of work and fitting it into a story, Moulin Rouge instead finds songs that works for the situation or the script. But either way, the double thrill of a song you already enjoy being worked into a storyline and reimagined and covered in such a different way. Moulin Rouge is one of my favorite films of all time. And I think that's particularly why I love it, how well it uses existing songs.
Agree. I would also say, however, that this is where I'm going to contradict myself and really us and talk about the importance of the singer then, because I think that that's the issue. And it's also the issue with translating stage musicals to well-known, very well-known stage musicals to film. I don't think that Russell Crowe would have been as lambasted if people haven't heard like thousands, hundreds of performers do that song much, much, much better. And so then there's a certain base level expected. And in that same vein with Across the Universe, so just to say that Dania says Across the Universe is a great musical. It's just good to listen to the Beatles. Daya also says Across the Universe, if that counts. Esther said Moulin Rouge. So there are definitely calls, and Mamma Mia earlier counted as well. But mm-hmm. I think the danger here is that when a song is very well known, when in fact you may have already sung it in karaoke yourself, then the level of performance you expect from the singer or the performer, whether it's in terms of like sheer charisma or being able to actually sing at least, you know, tunefully, that's escalated. And Moulin Rouge works because I think that they both can sing.
And they do it so differently. So to me, your song, Elton John, and your song that Ewan McGregor sings in the film are fundamentally two different songs. When I listen to them, I almost feel like I'm listening to the same words, similar tune, but the feel is so different. And I think Moulin Rouge is clever in that sense because it really reimagines and visualizes the songs in such different ways.
Glee, same thing, right?
Mm.
I think that's why I didn't follow Glee.
I was going to say, my God, you don't like musicals, but you watched Glee.
No, I didn't follow Glee for that same reason. It's like I'm watching TV show, they start singing and stuff. But I feel like even though not all the covers work and not all the renditions work, especially when they cover Michael Jackson, because that's incredibly difficult to do. A lot of it sounds good, and a lot of it you can appreciate for just sounding different from the actual song itself. Which is fun. You can listen to them separately.
I think the thrill was also in sort of waiting to see which song they did next. And yeah, that TV can do quite well.
Mm-hmm.
So we have so many messages that have come in and a fair variety, actually. So Singh says Hairspray, which is something
I love Hairspray. It's such a fun, over-the-top musical. And, you know, the 60s music is just ace.
Have not seen Hairspray.
You might like Hairspray, I want to go out on a limb and say.
There are a few versions of Hairspray, right?
The Travolta version is actually really fun.
Oh,
it has Christopher Walken and John Travolta dancing a duet.
Okay, sold.
Done.
Sold.
We also have Suan saying The Last 5 Years.
I haven't watched it. So many people like it because it's got Anna Kendrick in it.
I've heard good things. I haven't actually seen it. We also have Asnita who says, do musical TV series count? I love Galavant. It has adventure, comedy, romance, and a lot of pop culture references. And again, I've not seen it, but now I really want to.
I didn't know it existed. So that's a good one to put down on the list, I think.
Is Galavant the one with Daniel Radcliffe or is that something else? Am I thinking of some other show? Because it sounds like Galavant.
Interesting. I didn't know Daniel Radcliffe had done a musical TV show.
No, maybe he never did. Maybe I'm thinking of something else completely.
No, so it looks as if I have the right one, then Galavant is a... yes, that's right. It was written by Dan Fogelman, created by Dan Fogelman. It features music and lyrics by Alan Menken, actually, and Glenn Slater, which is quite... I mean...
Disney.
And it looks like it's set in a medieval thing. It's fantasy comedy. I want to watch this. I'm
kind
sold.
Of, right?
Yeah.
Ken Hung says, nothing beats Mel Brooks, the producers. The burning question is choosing between the 1967 or 2005 film.
That is a tough one. I don't think I could choose. They're both so different.
I've only seen the 2005.
Actually, yeah. I was going to say, you love Mel Brooks. I'm surprised
I love Mel Brooks.
Do you like the producers?
I don't remember much from it. To be like completely honest, yeah.
It seems like something you would like because of the satirical nature, because of the comedic nature of it. So it doesn't hinge only on whether you like or dislike the songs. We do also have Xiong An saying Chicago. I loved how it effortlessly transitioned between song and real life. Renee Zellweger was such a joy to watch.
Chicago is one of my favorite remakes of a modern remake of a musical. And I just think because it takes all of the... jazz and darkness and fun of the stage version. But then on film, you get to see people like Catherine Zeta-Jones. And I don't think we talked about this enough. The joys of watching like really fun, charismatic, accomplished actors take on these roles that you'd never see them do otherwise. I love Chicago just because of all of those things.
I feel like they're going to be a series of recommendations where I have not seen or I have to add to, you know, like I need to watch this soon.
We haven't actually said you would enjoy that many, but I think Chicago is among them because earlier you talked about the aesthetics of Sweeney Todd, and Chicago definitely has that going for it. It's a really, really beautiful movie to look at. Rowan says, some emotions can only be fully expressed through music and the human voice, so musicals elevate a story for me. I love them. I count Wicked, My Fair Lady as my favourites. Baz Luhrmann's Moulin Rouge is another one.
Oh, I love Moulin Rouge, as I've said. Wicked. I kind of want a screen version. I really do.
I'm interested to see. I also have to watch Wicked, but I'm interested to see if anyone's going to mention Sing Street, because that I just remember that that's also one of my favorites. I think it was like an awards darling in 2016 or 2017 or something. But that's another musical that I really like, Sing Street.
I enjoyed Sing Street a lot as
I've never watched it, so maybe I should.
So Meng says, are the Oompa Loompas doing a musical? I think it's more of a musical interlude, right? Than qualifying the whole movie as a musical.
And the kind of stuff I imagine Arvin would be okay with.
I would be okay with.
Because it hits the 2-song mark. It's only 1 song. It's not that bad. Jesper says, Thoroughly Modern Millie, The Wizard of Oz, Glitter. Oh, and I mean, we've come this far and we didn't mention Glitter.
You know, I've not watched Glitter, so but I understand the love-hate relationship that many people have with it.
Is Wizard of Oz a musical?
It is. It has. So isn't it weird that you don't remember it that way, though? Because it's not sung through. The songs are very contained in scenes.
Yeah. I mean, I know the songs. I remember the songs, but I don't remember that many. And for some reason, it just feels like a normal film.
It's a huge film. It's like the movie is long. Mm. So yeah maybe that's so why. There's a lot of dialogue and there's a lot of singing.
The movie is long and it packs in a lot, right? And it was an innovator for its time. So I think when we think about it now, we tend to think about the Technicolor stuff and the props and the people getting poisoned because of the silver paint, but not necessarily the songs that were in it. We also have, and I've been saving this for a while because I think it's a bit controversial. So we have Koo and Joseon both saying Evita, with Koo going on to say Evita with the legend Madonna singing Don't Cry For Me Argentina, which is abbreviated here, by the way, to DCFM Argentina, which I've never seen before.
Except I knew exactly what that meant.
Exactly.
You know, Evita's an interesting one because as much as musical theatre lovers hate her version of on screen, I would have never been interested in or even wanted to watch the stage version if I hadn't seen her play Evita in the film. So I think sometimes the movie ends up being a great way to lead people to the original.
I didn't even know there was controversy. I was fine with the movie. Like it seemed fine to me.
Pop star being cast to play what's supposed to be like this operatic singing role.
It's mostly around Madonna's vocal capacity, I think. But again, we then have to talk about the charisma that she brings to the role, which is quite a lot. I did also want to note, while we're in Andrew Lloyd Webber territory, nobody brought up Cats.
I was just saying, thank God, but then there you go.
It had to be said. It had to be said. There haven't been that many Andrew Lloyd Webber adaptations, actually, and Cats was a huge
perhaps
one.
Perhaps for good reason, if you look at Cats.
So, okay. We have, let's see, Jun saying Sound of Music, My Fair Lady, Mary Poppins, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, Fiddler on the Roof. Alex also says Fiddler on the Roof. Jun goes on to say only diehard fans will remember Chinese operas on stage that were moved to the silver screen, such as Flowers of a Dynasty.
I didn't know that was a thing. I don't think I've ever watched those, or watched clips of those, rather.
I thought he meant like diehard fans, like the movies. I'm like, what is happening?
Die Hard, the Christmas musical.
Oh, I would so watch that. I would so watch that.
Can I close off by asking this, right? We've been talking about musicals as a form. How do you both feel when they enter things? So, for example, most TV shows, when they hit a certain point, will do a musical episode. You know, Buffy did it, Scrubs did it.
Lucifer just did it.
Grey's Anatomy did it. So it you have to hit a certain point and then you do it. But how do you feel about those?
I used to find it interesting because it used to be unusual. So when Buffy did it and Scrubs did it, I was fine. But by this point, I feel like it's become such an expectation that it's become boring. It's gotten a little eye-rolly for me by now.
I've always felt like it was a waste of an episode. Like when you get to that point and then they start singing and I'm like, oh man, it's one of those. It's like a whole week taken up for this. So yeah, I've always felt like those episodes were waste of time.
Oh my God, it's really deteriorated over the course of the show.
I told you, you got to watch it. You got to watch the language. It just took a dive.
I know what it sounds. It's very Scroogey, but you know, that's the immediate reaction.
I like it when they write songs. So I love it when the writers
so original
stretch
songs,
themselves.
Yeah.
Yes, when they stretch themselves to actually write the songs and choreograph the pieces. I really enjoy that. And good grief, we still have messages. So Sayu says Wizard of Oz is one that you haven't mentioned. Actually, we just got there. And also Oliver Twist, which I'm surprised we didn't bring up earlier.
Oh, Oliver the Musical, yes.
Some other musicals that you haven't mentioned yet. Dreamgirls, Greatest Showman. That one we talked about, but not necessarily complimentarily. A Star is Born, High School Musical.
Is A Star is Born a musical or a film with songs?
I just wanted to ask the same thing.
I think it's film with songs.
Yeah, a film with performances, and that's about it, no? Yeah, yeah.
And they're good. I don't have a problem with the songs being there, but I think they really can't be considered as musicals. The songs aren't integrated into the story that way.
Yeah, they're performances, literally.
Mm. We also have Lim, who says, I feel old, but I love Fiddler on the Roof and Oliver. I remember my mum showing me the porridge scene when I don't finish my food. Alice says, I have a soft spot for legacy stage musicals. Back in the early 90s, The Star brought several stage musicals to KL, and I really miss that. The Merry Widow, Oklahoma, Sound of Music, Peter Pan, legacy musicals, love them. And in closing, a name that comes up very often, Norman just says, how about P. Rumley?
Oh, that's a lovely one. You know, we threw back to a P. Rumley film last year, I want to say. Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. Time has lost all meaning. And it reminded me of how much I loved those films. So they were modeled after the Indian, you know, Bollywood and Tamil films, right? So P. Rumley films are so great and the songs are so great. Watching him sing on screen is such a treat.
Yeah, I mean, completely agree. I can listen to his songs like separately, and I even have like something saved on Spotify where it's just covers of his songs. So yeah, P. Rumley songs like top notch.
So we sit watching him sing, but I think watching him dance is also a beautiful thing. I just wanted to throw that in there. So thank you all so much for validating 2/3 of the Popcorn Culture team and our love of musical. because we've been spending all this hour really talking about that very thing, talking about just the love of it and whether it works or doesn't work for us. Let us know. Keep those thoughts coming. You can share your favorite musicals with us. You can also tell us if you don't love them and why. You can, of course, continue to WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. Write to us at movies@bfm.my. And find us at BFM Popcorn. We are everywhere you would care to look. We're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, we're on TikTok. That's it from us. And we're closing off with one of the most mentioned musicals and perhaps one of the more controversial ones in recent times. We have a bit of Les Miserables and One Day More. That's coming up after this, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.